KNOM Update News. I'm Lorelai Kinnean, and it's 9:02.
If you were underwater, how would this sound affect you? And what about this sound? The first sound was an icebreaker. The second sound was a seismic oil investigation 30 miles away. Both sounds were recorded underwater. Marine biologists are working with Statoil to uncover how sounds like these and other industrial disturbances like sight and smell affect marine mammals and subsistence hunting. Jen Duchesne, a marine biologist on the project, is gathering this data using both Western science and traditional knowledge collected through interviews.
Unless you're also taking into account this huge expert body of knowledge from the local people who've been living in these communities and being out on the ocean for thousands of years, you're missing a huge piece of the best available information that's right there. When you have both traditional and local knowledge and Western science together, now you have a better picture.
Thursday night, Statoil presented this project to NOAM. NOAM's located 500 miles south of Statoil's leasehold in the Chukchi Sea, and pending on the company's decision to drill, Jim Weingartner, Statoil Alaska Operation Manager, said the company is looking at NOAM as a potential logistics hub. If not used as a hub, Weingartner said NOAM would possibly be used for crew changes and fuel transfers and would definitely be affected by increased vessel traffic passing through the Bering Strait. Statoil marine biologist Jürgen Weisenberger said drilling and vessel traffic would also impact aquatic migration passing near NOAM. Multiple community members at the meeting asked what Statoil considers safe drilling. Ella Eid, Statoil stakeholder engagement manager, said the company creates standards but recognizes the reality of its operation.
We have a policy of zero harm to the environment, and that includes to people. Having said that, there's no such thing as zero risk, and we recognize that. We do our best to plan with many, many levels of safeguards in place.
Weisenberger said the industry measures risk by how likely something is going to happen, multiplied by the seriousness of the event. He then turned the question of safe drilling around, making the matter a shared industrial and social responsibility.
What is an acceptable level of risk? And that is also a question society has to answer. What risk do we want to accept to get our cars running and our houses warm? When is zero harm reached? Is one harmed animal in a population of 100,000, is that a thing that has to be taken very seriously, or is that the price we are want to pay?
Eid said if Statoil decides to drill in the Chukchi Sea, it would first conduct a socio-economic impact assessment for NOAM, and drilling would not begin before 2015. The biologists studying the effects of industrial disturbances plan to publish their research if granted permission by the people interviewed. Interviews took place in Wainwright, Kotzebue, and Point Hope. The two scientists conducting the traditional knowledge interviews were marine biologists. The Museum and Library Commission met in NOAM on Friday for a work session. During the meeting at the Public Safety Building, there was an update on the designs and construction status of the proposed Richard Foster Building. The commission heard information from ECI Hire, the project's architects. In regards to the building's engineering elements, the news is better than expected. Permafrost in the land for the proposed site is relatively even, and there should be no problems driving pilings 60 to 80 feet down into the bedrock. Diesel contamination from nearby storage tanks will not be disturbed by the construction. Much of the diesel, it seems, has pooled in an underground basin close by. ECI Hire gave two different timetables for completing the project, both wrapping up in 2016. The scheduling discrepancies center around coordinating barge deliveries with the decision of whether or not to speed up contract bidding. There was also another piece of good news from the architectural firm. Given the precarious state of the economy amid the government shutdown, the project could expect to catch a break on material expenses. The designs for the building are not yet solidified. Questions of layout, bathroom placement, and sight lines still remain and were discussed at length during the meeting. When it's completed in 2016, the Richard Foster Building will house the Carrie M. McLean Memorial Museum, a library, a room dedicated to Richard Foster, and a large space to be leased to Kowarik. An NBC affiliate and Alaska's largest telecommunications company are at an impasse in a contract dispute over program distribution in rural communities. General Communications Inc. says it will drop Anchorage station KTUU from 9 communities after a contract expires on Tuesday. The areas affected include Barrow, Bethel, Cordova, Kodiak, Kotzebue, Kuparuk, Nome, and 2 on the North Slope. GCI spokesperson David Morris says KTUU wanted to be paid more than $2 million to continue the agreement. He says no money is involved under the current agreement. And KTUU spokesperson Brad Hillwig says KTUU proposes the same no-cost offer to GCI, but the telecommunications company has an interest in removing KTUU from those markets. GCI has purchased 3 television stations in Anchorage, Juneau, and Sitka, and KTUU is among companies challenging the purchase. The company contracted with the state to manage Alaska's new online medical records database is defending its privacy protections. KUAC's Dan Brass reports the Alaska eHealth Network, like many across the country, resulted from state and federal mandates designed to improve efficiency and privacy of health information transfer. Alaskans are required to actively opt out of the system if they don't want their medical records in the database. The American Civil Liberties Union is critical of that and has also raised concerns about access by hackers and government agencies. Alaska eHealth Network Executive Director Rebecca Madison acknowledges there are issues with electronic transfer, but she says precautions have been taken.
We use the most secure protocols that we can. We ensure that everything is encrypted. We store no data clinically in a place where the demographic data is stored so that they travel in 2 different streams and they meet up only when the doctor has a clinical viewer to view that.
Madison says, as with electronic transfer of financial information, there's also a chance that people with malicious intent can hack in and try to access data, but it's better protected than the system it's replacing.
It's much more secure than the paper records we used to have that were sent around by mail and by fax. There were many more ways to intercept that data.
Madison also points out that the online system's advantage of providing doctors immediate access to health records. She advises people to weigh the risks and benefits in deciding whether or not to participate. The Alaska eHealth Network is overseen by a public working group, and its operation is governed by state law. And a look at the price of gold today, up $11.40 an ounce to $1,285.60. An ounce of silver up 19 cents to $21.63. It's currently 10 minutes after 9 o'clock.